Now, in a world where office jobs and TV watching are the norm, we assume that exercise is good and necessary and that we should want to exercise. Now, we sometimes feel bad when we don't want to exercise. Entire industries have popped up to encourage us to get active, from special clothing to wear, equipment to buy, and gyms and clubs where we pay money to wear ourselves out. But in human evolution, the modern form of exercise is a pretty new concept. It's something our ancestors might have been baffled by, and our next guest says we can get more benefit from exercise if we realize how, in some ways, unnatural it is. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Does exercise come naturally to you, or do you have to struggle to get yourself to do it? What questions do you have about how it works, how much, how little, what kind of exercise we should be doing? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Daniel Lieberman is the Edwin M. Lerner II Professor of Biological Sciences in the Department of Human Evolutionary Biology at Harvard University. His new book is called Exercised: Why Something We Never Evolved to Do Is Healthy and Rewarding. Daniel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
That's a great pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Well, this fundamental idea, it's right there in your subtitle. We did not evolve to exercise, at least not the way we think of exercise these days. Why not?
Well, it's important to make a distinction between physical activity, which is right, just moving, right? You know, when you go to the supermarket and get stuff, or go climb a tree because you want to get a cat out of it or whatever, right? That's just physical activity. But exercise is a special kind of physical activity. It's discretionary, it's voluntary, it's unnecessary physical activity that we plan to do for the sake of health and fitness. And until recently, people had to be physically active, but they also were limited in calories, and so they avoided physical activity when it wasn't beneficial, when it didn't have any sort of immediate need or wasn't fun.
And you spend a lot of time in the book, well, and in your career, looking to a modern hunter-gatherer societies for, you know, an idea of what all of our ancestors who are hunter-gatherers, how they might have behaved, the kind of work they do. You've been all over the world looking at this. And yeah, in talking to people, this idea that you would run, but you weren't chasing or being chased by something, is baffling to people who aren't living and are sitting in a desk world.
Yeah, it's true. I love to ask people, you know, and there are cultures, you know, like the famous Tara Humara, who do run long distances, or in Kenya, where I've done most of my field work, where we work with in the area where a lot of the world's best runners come from. And when you ask people, you know, when do you run? They look at me like, well, when a goat gets loose, you know, that's when they run. But going for like a 5-mile jog in the morning, which is what I like to do, they think I'm crazy. Nobody does that. And, you know, if you think about it, it makes sense. Because for most people until recently, and for many people still on the planet, you know, they don't have an unlimited supply of energy, of calories. And so calories you spend, you know, going for a 5-mile jog, that's 500 calories, is calories you don't spend taking care of your body or helping, you know, your children. So it's kind of a strange thing that we do today, but we never used to do.
And this isn't just an academic exercise. You're looking at this to learn about how we in the United States say how we can get motivated to do kinds of physical activity that are healthy for us. If we don't understand how weird this concept of exercise is, it's going to be harder to get us to motivate ourselves. How can
Exactly.
learning from these other societies help us out here?
Exactly. Well, here's the thing, right? In the United States, the way we get people to exercise is we have two ways to do it. One is we've industrialized it, we've commodified it, we've commercialized it, right? We sell exercise and we buy exercise and we go to the gym and whatever. There's nothing wrong with that, right? But that's one of the ways we do it. And then the other way we do it is we've medicalized it. We prescribe it, you know. We exercise is medicine. And the evidence is out there, right? We know that these two different ways in which we try to get people to exercise just basically doesn't work all that well. According to many, many different government agencies and other studies, only about 20% of adult Americans get 150 minutes a week of physical activity, of moderate to vigorous physical activity. So that's like a brisk walk, right? That's 21 minutes a day, right? And that's 150 minutes a week is what every major organization in the world, health organization in the world, considers to be the minimum amount of physical activity somebody should get. So if only 20% are doing it on this sort of medicalized, commercialized perspective, you know, we need to try a different tack. And I think that an evolutionary and anthropological approach can help us do better.
Now, one telling thing in your book for me, I've got a treadmill in my basement. I got it for free and I use it, you know, when I can't get outside for a walk. Once upon a time, the treadmill was part of a prison sentence. People were confined and made to walk on treadmills as a punishment.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, if you think treadmill is torture, you're in good company because the treadmill was actually invented a man named William Cubitt. He was hired to produce. You know, they were worried that prisoners in Victorian jails in England were kind of relaxing too much and not being punished enough. So they created this treadmill to make people trudge for hours and hours and hours. And you know, people like Oscar Wilde, for example, were required to trudge on treadmills for hours and hours and hours. So if you don't like a treadmill, and I put people on treadmills for a living, but I don't enjoy them much either. And if you feel it's a form of torture, there's a reason.
Talking to Daniel Lieberman about his new book, Exercised, Why Something We Never Evolved to Do is Healthy and Rewarding. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you naturally like to do physical activity and exercise? Do you motivate yourself to do it even though it's a chore? Or have you just kind of run into a brick wall trying to find the thing that works for you? Share your story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You look at exercise and physical activity, Daniel, and you also look at inactivity and, you know, sitting. And I'm one of these people, I hear sitting's bad. Okay, I stand and host the show. I have standing workstations. But in looking at these other cultures, hunters and gatherers and elsewhere, they sit a lot too. Tell us what you learned from how and when they sit.
Yeah, well, so I start the book off by thinking about physical inactivity, because if you want to understand activity, you also have to understand inactivity. And you can't exercise all day long, right? You know, and the reason I called the book Exercised is, to be exercised, to be anxious, nervous, worried, harassed, confused, right? And we have made people exercised about the topic of physical activity and inactivity. And a good example is sitting, right? We've demonized sitting. We say it's like the new smoking. Your chair is out to kill you, you know, and you can read all kinds of horrible statistics out there about how smoking is, you know, sitting is, you know, unnatural. But I think most people know that instinctively that smoking and sitting aren't the same thing, and that sitting is nowhere as near as harmful as smoking. And it turns out that it's also not unnatural. If you go into a hunter-gatherer camp or a village of farmers, places like where I work, people are sitting most of the time when they're not working, and they're not working crazy hard. So hunter-gatherers work about 2.25 hours a day. The rest of the time, they're in camp sitting. So sitting itself isn't so bad, or it's not unnatural. It's just that there are better and worse ways to sit. So rather than demonizing sitting, why don't we give people the real information that they need to know, which is that break up your bouts of sitting so that you don't sit for long, uninterrupted periods of time, and also try to sit more actively. It turns out it's helpful to, you know, squat or not have a chair with a back, etc. So using some of your muscles. And, you know, evidence shows that it's not work time sitting that's associated with poor health outcomes. It's leisure time sitting. So if you work all day at a desk, don't panic, because if you get home, you know, you can go do a little bit of physical activity, you know, go for a half hour walk or something like that. You're gonna do fine.
You tackle in each chapter, really, the book, myths about exercise and inactivity. One of them has to do, getting back to motivation here, with the idea of just do it. Just do it as an effective tool of motivation, not such an effective strategy. Why not?
Well, the evidence shows it doesn't work. If you just tell people to exercise, that's not going to get them to exercise. We just know that, right? And I think there's a deep and fundamental reason for that, because for millions of years, for thousands and thousands of generations, right, people struggled to get enough food, right? And to get the food, they had to be physically active. But to then spend extra energy on physical activity that didn't have any kind of benefit wasn't helpful, right? So it was selected against. So we evolved to be physically active for two reasons and two reasons only. One is when it's necessary, and the other is when it's rewarding, especially socially rewarding. So like, for example, going for a dance, right? Where you get to show off and meet people and form social bonds, or play. That's another form of physical activity that's rewarding, right? And that helps build skills, and we teach each other not to be, you know, bad sports and stuff like that. So if we want to help each other be physically active, we have to find ways to make it both necessary and socially rewarding. And the best way to do that is make it fun and make it social and make it playful, or use commitment contracts. You know, one idea is to treat exercise like education. Education is as abnormal as exercise, right? Nobody learned geology or geography or you know, algebra or, you know, states capitals back in the old day, right? But how do we make school work? We make it necessary, and we also make it fun. We make it social, and there's also, you know, all kinds of things that make kids want to go to school. We should treat exercise exactly the same way.
We're picking up our talk with Daniel Lieberman. His new book is called Exercised: Why Something We Never Evolved to Do is Healthy and Rewarding. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences with exercise and motivation. What successfully got you exercising, maybe even if you had to overcome some hurdles to do it? Have you still not found what you're looking for when it comes to exercise? 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Wendy is with us in Algoma. Wendy, hi. Do we have Wendy? We don't have Wendy. Let's go to James then in Spooner. James, hello.
Hello.
James, hi. Greetings. What did you want to bring up?
Yes, I just wanted to call in and let you know what motivated me. Basically, a couple years before this COVID thing happened, I kind of upped my exercise routine. And what I have a tendency to do is read scriptures, do a little bit of meditation, then I put some praise music or just music on because I'm a musician too. And I do an exercise routine for about 45 minutes to an hour. I do 277 sit-ups, 77 push-ups, 77 deep knee bends, some hurdler stretches and leg lifts and stuff to go with. Now, I do it or got my motivation kind of from the fact or my belief that my body is the temple of God, and I try to do maintenance to his temple every day. It helps me keep from having depression. It helps me be happy, and my quality of life for the day, for today, is
James,
better.
Thank you so much for sharing that. You gave us a lot to work with there. First of all, Daniel, you were talking about reward. Part of what will motivate us to do exercise is reward. James saying his reward, it sounds like, is he realizes he feels better. His mood is better. His depression goes away. Is that part of the thing that can help us get motivated?
Well, absolutely. Well, here's the thing, right? First of all, it's wonderful that James is, you know, got this fantastic routine and it's clearly working for him.
Yeah.
The problem is that a lot of people struggle to get into that kind of mode, right? Into that kind of routine. And one of the problems is that the reward that you get from exercise, what makes James feel great after exercise, all the good stuff happens after you exercise, not before you exercise. So dopamine is the neurotransmitter that gets released and synthesized, you know, when we're physically active, and that's the molecule of more. That's the neurotransmitter which says, do it again. That was awesome, right? The problem is that dopamine doesn't happen before you do it. It happens after you do it. So people struggle to kind of get that, right? And like, I'm no different. I mean, in the morning when I go for a run, I'm mostly a runner, right? I often don't want to leave, right? But I know that when I get back, I'll be glad I did it. And I kind of coerce myself. I meet a friend, you know, and then I have to be there at 6 a.m. on the corner of the street, you know, where I live, to meet him. But you know, it's the problem is that most people are struggling to get where James is at. And I think that what we need to do is compassionately help them do it. Virtue signaling is not effective, right? You know, mm-hmm. Letting people know just how good you know, people have like the 26.2 stickers on the back of their car. You know, that doesn't help people run, right? It just kind of makes people irritated, I suspect. So we need to find ways to be compassionate and understand that people who don't exercise, they're not lazy. There's nothing wrong with them. They're actually normal. They're completely normal human beings.
Another point James brought up is that he's motivated in part here by his faith. And that reminds me, some of the societies you looked at, the physical activity that isn't directly connected to survival often has some kind of ritual or maybe spiritual purpose. Is there something we can learn from that, whether we're drawing on our spirituality or creating exercise rituals, even if they're secular in nature, to get us motivated?
Absolutely. I mean, I had the good fortune of spending a lot of time doing research with some Native American groups, the Tarahumara in Mexico, and they are famous for these long-distance runs. And what people don't often know about them is that their main motivation for these long runs is it's a form of prayer. It's beautiful. It's spiritual. It's really moving. And so it's a way that shows that physical activity for them is meaningful. It's right. And, you know, how many kids in America grow up thinking, you know, that they want to, you know, show their faith or whatever by you know, running long distances? It's just not something that we do, right? But for almost every Native American peoples, that's an important, running is an important part of sort of their spirituality, of their existence. And I think we can learn a lot from that. It's wonderful.
Thanks for the call, James. Gave us a lot to talk about there. Talking to Daniel Lieberman about his book, Exercised, Why Something We Never Evolved to Do is Healthy and Rewarding. All right, so just do it isn't going to get us going. Shaming each other isn't going to get us going. You've started to touch on this, the social aspects, the fun aspects for that person who's just not feeling it, not getting that exercise. How can they evaluate themselves and figure out the kind of things that are going to work for them?
Well, I mean, I think we all know what we enjoy, right? I mean, I think that, you know, the problem is that a lot of the prescriptions that we get, you know, are like taking cod liver oil, right? And you know, that's not fun either, but at least it gets over in a few seconds, right? You just gulp it down, you deal with the nasty flavor, and then you're on your way, right? But exercise is a more prolonged and a harder sort of barrier to overcome. So the trick is to find something you enjoy doing. So if you don't like being on a treadmill, or you can't find a podcast or a TV show to watch that makes it enjoyable, find something else that you find enjoyable or fun. So that's I think the first thing. Secondly, you don't need to do a huge amount. Data show that just a little bit is incredibly beneficial. If you just exercise, if you're not exercising at all, just a few minutes a day can have enormous benefits. So some is better than none, and you don't need to run a marathon or do 170 something push-ups or whatever, which is great, but you don't need to do that. And then the final thing is, think about a commitment contract, right? This is how schools work. This is how so many things work, right? Where you can designate somebody as a referee or agree to meet somebody. Like I on Thursday mornings, I meet friends to do intervals. You know, we run on the track, right? And I never want to be there at 7 in the morning on this cold, miserable track, right? But I have to meet them, right? So it's a contract I have with them. And then we cheer each other on and we help each other. And that makes it fun. And it doesn't have to be running. It can be walking. It can be dancing. It can be anything. But commitment contracts have been shown to be extremely effective. And we can, there's so many ways to do them.
Now, there is a big portion of the population that does exercise, and I think thinks a lot about and argues a lot about what the best kind of exercise is. You tackle that that problem. What answer do you offer people, those non-exercisers, as to what kind of exercise would be best?
I would encourage we stop thinking that way. I mean, that's part of the medicalization of exercise, right? That it's like there's an optimal dose. You know, like when you take your coronavirus, right? There's a particular dose you have to take. Well, exercise doesn't work that way, right? Everybody's different. We all have different goals. Whether you're male or female or young or old or fit or non-fit, whether you're worried about Alzheimer's or osteoporosis or heart disease or whatever, it's all different for all of us. The important thing is to do something. And but if you are going to try to do it as well as possible, it's pretty simple. You know, some is better than none. Cardio is the bedrock of every exercise program, but it's important to do weights a little bit, you know, some strength training, especially as we get older, and just mix it up. And, you know, that's far more important than tuning the dose just right, because there is no optimal dose. That's a fictitious thought.
In our last minute or so, Daniel, you've been all over the world looking at exercise. You started off in life, as I read you, not an exercise guy. Do you feel like you've learned a lot from the people you've worked with around the world?
Oh my gosh, it's been very inspiring and fun and wonderful. I mean, I'm very into participant observation. So every time I've gone and studied people doing stuff, I've tried to do it myself. And I found it humbling, but also empowering, because I've learned, you know, if you ever met me, you would not think of me as an athlete. I'm not fast. I'm not strong. I hid in closet during, to avoid gym when I was a kid, you know, I was picked last for every team. And yet I've learned that, you know, just basic normal human physical activity is quite impressive and wonderful. And we're all athletes. We focus too much on elite athletes. We focus too much on weight loss. Just what your average human being can do is marvelous. And here's a final fact for fun. Your average sedentary American, you know, your couch potato, right, is still more active than your average wild chimpanzee.
Huh. Well, that's inspiring. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's Daniel Lieberman, professor of biological sciences at Harvard University. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Exercised: Why Something We Never Evolved to Do is Healthy and Rewarding.